My heart pitter-patters for free cheesy garlic pitters. Solo Nando's is self-care. And before you know it, an extra hot date with my free chicken wrap. Maybe it's a little takeaway treat. The possibilities are endless. But what the hoot in heck is that? A free whole chicken? A top-tier Nando's reward, the ultimate act of love? Stunning. Then here we are again, the pitter-patter of free cheesy garlic pitter.
Sign up to Nando's rewards and fall in love with free food again and again.
T's and C's apply.
If you already prepay for your energy, a smart meter means you can top up at the touch of a button. Whether you're on the sofa,
with your little cherubs,
at the shops, after the shops have closed, or when you're cozy in bed and it's raining cats and chicos.
Top up anytime, anywhere. In-store, on mobile or online. Search Get a Smart Meter. Eligibility may vary. Consumer action required.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Tim, we kind of coordinated our outfit today. A little bit. Not so much, but thank you for being here from North Carolina. Your new place is looking very furnished, very fancy. Levi's got his nice spot by the computer with you. How's life going, Tim?
It's going well. Yeah, the place is coming together. When we crop these videos for the show, you can't really see much be over like what's over my shoulders, basically. But the room is filled out. The place is great. Weekend was good. We were out near Boone in Western North Carolina for a little mountain retreat with a big group of people. That was a lot of fun. And the big thing, of course, was the game on Saturday night. Got to watch that, the whole thing. I was the only one who watched the whole thing, but I was the only hockey fan anyway. It was incredible. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I will say, I the circle I run in here in Traverse City, it's not a ton of hockey fans, but, you know, I would say casual fans. Everybody watched this hockey game. Yeah. Everybody was talking about it. And if you didn't watch it, they were asking me questions. They were trying to get my opinion because I'm the only guy who played hockey here. I'm from Canada. Everybody's giving me a hard time. Oh, Canada lost. So suck that. 51st state. All that sort of thing. It was the news to talk about in Traverse City. And it was just because, Tim, it was. And I don't want to steal your thunder, but I'll just lead off by saying that first period of that game is the best hockey I've ever watched in my life. And I'm talking going back to, you know, 1972, the Summit Series, 1980 Olympics. I've watched all the World Cup of Hockeys, going back to all the Olympics I've watched. That was the best first period of hockey I have ever seen in my life. All the theatrics, all the lead up, the national anthem, and for the players to come in and knock it out of the park like that, it was incredible. And that's besides the fights. The fights were a cherry on top, Tim, but it was incredible. What did you think? I was like, this is unbelievable. It was so excellent.
I was giddy watching the game, especially the first period. And you, like you said, the fights were cherry on top, but the hockey itself was incredible. But even just the buildup, it was so palpable in the hockey world, right? And even the sports world. And like you said, I have people that don't follow hockey texting me about it, like the same thing. Like, what do you think of this? What was that? And just kind of put this in historical context, because of COVID and other things that the league has done, the last time the USA played Canada in a true best-on-best tournament was the World Cup in 2016. Canada won that game 4-2. The last time they played each other in the Olympics was 2014 in Sochi. Canada won that game 1-0. The U.S. hasn't beaten Canada since 2010 in the preliminary round. And that game was so long ago that Brian Rafalski had 3 points in that game. Like, this is a different generation. And Canada got payback 2 days later with Sidney Crosby's golden goal in overtime. So, like, Canada's dominated the U.S. This is a historic game, and you have never seen McDavid and Crosby and MacKinnon on a team together. You hadn't seen this group of Americans on a team together. And so the buildup was really strong. And there were a couple things about this, too, that were kind of like, as if it couldn't get any more exciting and more, like, anticipatory. You kind of some key storylines here, one of them being Cale Makar. was out for the game with an illness. He skated that morning at practice. He was trying to work through it and couldn't do it. So they brought in, you know, we talked about this last week. Is it going to be Uyghur? Is it going to be Bouchard? Is it going to be Elaine Hudson? Is it going to be, they have a lot of strong defensemen. It was one that no one talked about, that no one had on their list. Thomas Harley out of Dallas. He was on his way to Cabo, like most of those guys were this past weekend. He got the call. He gets there that morning. Wasn't allowed to even skate or practice with the team because McCarr hadn't officially bowed out yet. So McCarr is still skating. He's trying to work through it. Harley could skate on his own, but he's getting up into game pace. And I asked our Patreon in our Slack, one of the more active members, John S., not John Scott, is a huge Dallas Stars fan. So I asked him, I'll give him a quick shout out. He said Harley is currently the number one D-man in Dallas, obviously with Heiskanen out. Good speed, makes good first passes. Defense is getting better. He was a liability a couple of years ago, was sent down to develop. In a few years, he will probably be considered a number one D-man on any team. He just needs more experience. And he jumped in. I thought he played really well. He was like, he's a long body, long stick. He plays it well. Good positioning, good pass. And all things considered, he was one of their better defensemen, especially considering the fact that he hadn't practiced. So, yeah, huge loss for them not having McCarr. But the buildup, but that was just one of the things. You get into the game, and then the puck drops, and all you know what breaks loose.
Let's just stay on this Cale McCarr absence for a minute, because it's a bigger deal to just kind of gloss over. There's one thing to lose a Shea Theodore. He's not easily replaceable, but it's doable just because he's a solid defenseman. He does a lot of things really, really well. But replace, you cannot replace a Cale McCarr. He is one of those generational talents that just does everything, does it exceptionally well, and is just a game changer. So for them to lose him at the last minute and have to replace him with a Thomas Harley, that changes your game plan. That drastically alters how the coach deploys his defense. It pushes other people's into positions that they really weren't ready for. Drew Doughty, for instance, I'm guessing the coaches told Drew, you have to be more aggressive. We need to see you jump up in the play. We need to have a D-man with a playmaker. Because when you look at the lineup of the defense, who is the offensive option? Who is the guy who's going to lug the puck 200 feet to make plays, to be that fourth option in the rush? There's not a lot there. And I know Thomas Harley filled in admirably. He had a lot of good grade A chances, didn't score, but played great for a guy literally coming from the airport to Montreal, not seeing the team and getting thrust into this environment. He played great. But to lose Cale McCarr, big, big deal. Massive deal. If he's back, if Canada continues to leading Finland right now 2-0, if they win, they're in the finals versus USA. If he's back, that completely changes the complexity of this game. You now have that X factor where it's like, yeah, Jacob Slavin's great, Colton Branco's great, Drew Doughty's great, you have Harley, that's great. There's none of those guys scare me offensively, Tim. So well, to add that, it's huge.
Slavin's American, not to drop that.
Sorry, I'm an idiot. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Sorry.
But so it's 1:46 right now on Monday. We got, I have Canada, Finland on the other screen. Canada just scored again. It's 3-0 now. It's Braden Point, but 6 minutes left in the first period. So it's looking like it's going to be Canada in the finals if this continues.
Well, yeah, let's just go back to the fights then, Tim. I just wanted to get that Cale McCarr point out because it's massive if he's available for the gold medal game, which looks like it'll be Canada, USA for the finals. So the fights.
And he's playing in this one too. So.
Oh, well, I'm an idiot. I'm not even watching the game, so I should turn it on. So the fights. Coming into this game, all of the noise, all of the chatter around the USA is they're physical and they're going to drive it down your throat and they're overwhelming and they're deep. Team Canada hears this and they start to get a little annoyed. This goes deeper than just guys, I'm going to fight to fight. This was a statement making moment for both USA and Canada. And from the American point, I feel like this was them putting the stamp. And I know it's maybe overstating it. You know, big brother, small brother, Finland, Sweden, you know, always in their shadow. USA hockey has been in the shadow of Canada forever. Tim just pointed it out. Canada always comes out on top. And I'm guessing they've gotten tired of hearing it, and they know they have the better team. So this is a moment for them to step forward and say, no, this is our house. We are in Montreal. You boo our national anthem. We will dominate you from start to the finish of this game. So that was their statement making moment, saying we're gonna beat you up, and then we're gonna beat you in the scoreboard. We're gonna take your girl and we're gonna go home. This was their moment, saying this is our game now. And then conversely, for Team Canada, this was them trying to hold ground, saying, okay, no, this is still our game. And they were overmatched in every fight, minus the last one, Miller and Branko. But the Tkachuk brothers are tough. Like, this is right up their alley. Hagel, he's not tough. Sam Bennett, he can fight, but he's not in the same weight class as, you know, Brady Tkachuk, friend of the show. So I think coming out of the three fights, both teams got juiced by it. I think it was a win-win for both sides. And then for us pundits, Tim, I was soaking wet. It was so great. I loved every minute of it. Like, it was the best hockey, like the best way to start a game internationally ever. It's so incredible.
Yeah, and not to mention the way it got the building rocking. And it wasn't a US-Canada thing. It was just filled with the hockey fans just loving what they were seeing. You know what I mean? Like, it was just elation from the crowd. So the puck drops. You see the first one, Matthew Tkachuk and Hagel, like you mentioned. And it's funny because I was kind of telling people in the room where we were watching at the cabin, and they were saying, how does this happen? And I said, oh, they would have figured this out and had a conversation during warm-ups or something. Like, hey, you know, puck drops, you and me? Apparently not. Apparently, so the Tkachuk brothers and JT Miller, maybe a couple other guys, had a group chat going during the day. This was something that they had planned. But I don't think they kind of sprung it on Team Canada until that moment. So it sounds like Hagel didn't know, and he answered the bell right away till maybe, you know, a few minutes before that. So they dropped the gloves. I would say pretty even fight. I wouldn't say there's any clear winner. Hagel stood his ground, even though he was, you know, giving up a few inches and a few pounds. But the best part about the fight was just how hard they were going. They were throwing. They were trying to land. They were trying to hurt the other guy. This wasn't a stage fight. This wasn't like a swing and a miss. Let's go down and we're all okay. It's like, I'm trying to hurt you. And that set the tone for everything that came after it.
And I've said this for years now. The best fights are the ones that are not planned. It's just two guys who absolutely hate each other and they're trying to hurt each other. And it was fantastic. It was really, really good. It's international hockey. This is replacing the All-Star game. Everybody knows how great it was, so I'm not going to go on and on about something everybody knows. But for Hagel to step up, it's massive. And then for Bennett to come in there and fight Tkachuk the very next shift is massive. That was a big moment for Bennett because he didn't play game one. He comes in, he was the reason. The Tkachuks were the reason he's playing game two, because the Tkachuks were bullying Finland all over the ice. Like, they were just having their way with them after every whistle. Just during play, scrums, it was just bully ball from the Americans from start to finish from those two guys. So Bennett comes in, and he was the one who was supposed to calm the storm. I don't know if it worked. He did well, because Brady Tkachuk still ran around like an animal out there, absolutely just demolishing people. So, but it was a good moment for Sam Bennett to step up and say, okay, I'm going to try to calm it down. But that was, again, another even fight. I think Brady probably came out on top a little bit.
Yeah, and the cool thing was he was on the ice for the first one. So you can see Matthew fighting and Brady's right behind him and yelling and screaming.
Yeah.
And then apparently Bennett was on the bench when that first fight happened. And Brady went over and said, we're going next to Bennett. So Bennett hops over, like you said, answers the call, and then they go. And this is like, the Tkachuks are just so good for hockey. We're going to talk about kind of the fallout of this game and what it meant for just becoming its national buzz now. Another great tilt, like you said, Brady gets the takedown, so we'll give him a W. Two huge fights, and we're 3 seconds off the clock at this point. The puck
and another friend of the show, JT Miller,
yeah,
comes in and fights Colton Parayko, and they dump the puck in. He gets covered up by Binnington, and he charges the net, and they get tangled up, and he's fighting way out of his weight class. Parenko's a big dude. I think he's 6'6". JT Miller stands in and actually punches himself in the head, JT Miller, on the way down to lose his helmet. Very strange situation. But it's another, like, nice passion. I think JT Miller at that point is like, my line's already in the penalty box. I might as well join them. So let's just get after it, try to get in the penalty box and put a little cherry on this trio of fights. So it was great. It sets the tone right away. And I think both teams built off of that. I think it definitely energized the whole building. And holy hell, like, what better way to start a game 9 seconds in? You already have three fights from six stars.
Yeah.
Like, this is six legit stars. Well, I don't want to say stars. I'll say the American side are all stars. The Canadian side are not stars. Is that fair to say? So I think when you look at the rosters, Team Canada comes out on top because you can get Matthew and Brady and JT off the ice for a prolonged period of time. It's a win when you only lose Hagel, Bennett, and Parenko. So it's a win-win for both teams. But Canada came out on top as talent goes to speak. But it was, I loved it. It was so fun. It was so fun. And then the game starts, and boy, oh boy, Connor McDavid, the best player on the planet. And you could, you know, when you can see a play develop and you can just watch it, and you could totally tell McDavid in his head is screaming at Drew Doughty, wait till I round the corner. Wait. Let me get some speed, because he does the big loop like he always did in every single game. And he finally gets a little bit of separation in the neutral zone around the red line. And Drew Doughty hits him perfectly in stride. And I don't know what the American defensemen were thinking. You can obviously see him gaining speed, but he gets it. He's in full flight. And everybody has seen the goal. He goes backhand shelf over Hellebuck. I wish I was in that building. To feel the energy of that building. There's nothing like.
My heart pitter-patters for free cheesy garlic pitters. Solo Nando's is self-care. And before you know it, an extra hot date with my free chicken wrap. Maybe it's a little takeaway treat. The possibilities are endless. But what the hoot in heck is that? A free whole chicken. A top-tier Nando's reward. The ultimate act of love. Stunning. Then here we are again. The pitter-patter of free cheesy garlic pitter.
Sign up to Nando's Rewards and fall in love with free food again and again.
T's and C's apply.
If you already prepay for your energy, a smart meter means you can top up at the touch of a button. Whether you're on the sofa,
with your little cherubs,
at the shops, after the shops have closed, or when you're cozy in bed, like it's raining cats and chicos.
Top up anytime, anywhere. In-store, on mobile, or online. Search Get a Smart Meter. Eligibility may vary. Consumer action required.
Scoring a big goal in a great hockey barn, but to do it in Montreal, Tim, must be electric. Absolutely electric. For him to come down, score that goal, the place erupted. It was just tingling, the feelings you must have got. But, and then to see McDavid, he didn't look that fired up in any of the playoffs last year. And that's not saying the playoffs weren't, you know, high-pressure packed game. He played in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. He looked like a man possessed when he scored. He was so happy. And the boys coming around, I thought it was going to be all Canada after that. But what did you think of that goal?
Come on. Yeah, that was a tough one. And McAvoy got burned on that one. And you could tell that he took it personally, because he was a wrecking ball for the rest of the game. Not just McDavid, who he lined up for a couple monster hits. He was getting in Crosby's face on the power play. Like, he was all over him. And then we get a tying goal just 5 minutes later from another friend of the show, Jane Gensel. This, by the way, this tournament is just covered with friends of the show. They're making their names up for themselves left and right.
We need to stop interviewing these superstars. We need to just pump the brakes here, because I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. We got a lot of American players on our team. It's very fun. We did a little trivia on Patreon. How many friends of the show were in this tournament? It's quite a few.
Yeah, I think it's six or seven.
Seven.
Yeah, we'll say seven. So speaking of McAvoy, so obviously everyone knows USA won the game, but one of the things I want to talk about is this is something a lot of people are talking about, the U.S. defenseman in this game, because you're getting, you know, 60 minutes of McDavid, McKinnon, Crosby, Marner. Like, these are point, like, superstar players, no shifts off, and their bottom six is so physical and still so talented. So I think you have to give a huge shout out to them. And I would say they were very physical. McAvoy being probably the bigger part of that. Him and Slavin, I would say, with those body checks. Great sticks. This is like the best part of their game from the defenseman. Breaking up passes, poking the puck away, quick transition, the poke checks, especially in the neutral zone too. Like, it was hard. Canada had stretches where they just couldn't get anything going. And it wasn't huge hits. It wasn't US's offense. It was just the sticks and breaking stuff up. Really active. And I think Jacob Slavin was arguably the best player for Team USA in that game, but I think certainly the best defenseman, just doing what he does, just like throwing hits, breaking up plays. If you watch him on ISO on the penalty kill or just in his own zone, and you just watch him like think the game, you know, it's pretty cool to see. So I think you have to give a ton of credit to the US defenseman.
Oh, they play fantastic. Even the forwards coming back and clogging up the neutral zone, especially in the offensive zone. It felt to me at times that Canada was trying to make the extra pass Whereas the simple play, the easy play, and the right play was to just throw the puck on the net, to try to get some offense at the net, try to create some chaos in the D zone for the Canadian defenseman, or for the American defenseman, excuse me. And they wouldn't humble themselves to do that. They wanted to make that cross-ice pass go east-west instead of just firing at the net and seeing what happens. And we saw the Americans, their two goals, just throwing pucks at the net, just trying to score, not a grade-A opportunity, no screen, just throwing pucks at the net and good things happen. And it seems to me, and I know the Americans, they were in the right position. Their sticks were active. They were picking pucks off, uncharacteristically too. You're not used to seeing Connor McDavid and Marner and MacKinnon getting their passes deflected, getting them tipped, getting them picked off, and the USA are on the other way. That's something I noticed throughout the whole game. It wasn't just a one-off tip. It was consistent. Every time Canada was in the offensive zone, they didn't have that sustained 30, 45-second, one-minute shift where they're all over the Americans, just because the Americans were so good defensively. And maybe that goes to just a John Tortorella, Mike Sullivan coach team, where they demand you to be in the right spot or you're not going to play. But it was a clinic on just eliminating space, eliminating lanes, and just forcing you to do something you're not comfortable in doing. And that's throwing the puck away, throwing it on net, getting a rebound, trying to get a second chance opportunity. Canadians didn't do that. There was no rebounds. There was no scrums around the net for them. It was very one-dimensional. And to me, they couldn't shift their game. They still tried to do those dinky-dack passes. They tried to two-on-one guys. They tried to go through people, saucer pass, back pass, you know, pull up and try to find the trailer. It didn't work. The USA played perfectly in the D zone.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in Canada's defense, one of the reasons probably they weren't just throwing pucks on net and looking for that backdoor extra pass was who's in net for the Team USA. Connor Hellebuyck has been maybe the best player in this tournament so far. He leads the league in the tournament in goals against with one average and save percentage with 957. And just for perspective, no other goalie in the tournament has a save percentage above nine, and he's at 957. Bennington's the next best with 896. And Bennington's also second with 241 goals against and to Hellebuck's one. Like, there's no other goalie's doing anything close to what he's done in this tournament. This shows you how much better he's been. But on the other side, the USA team knew who was in the other net. And I think you and I are going to come a little bit on opposite sides of this, because I think Bennington has played really well. He has made a lot of big saves. He has only allowed two goals a game. Like, he's giving his team a chance to win. But you have to look at Gensel's goal and Larkin's goal. On the side, no good angle. Pick the corner, just let it rip, and it just didn't even touch it, either of them. So this is where you have to get into, like, okay, Bennington, we need one more save from you. So let's hear your take on this, John.
Okay. Bennington's given up five goals in two games. Five. Four of them have been garbage. Going back to Sweden, the Kempe goal was absolutely awful, and so was the Jonas Brodin goal. The only legit goal that he's given up is the Joel Eriksson Ek goal, the backdoor pass. That's the only legit goal where you say, okay, that's a goal. The other four are terrible, Tim. Absolutely terrible. The Larkin goal. Like, are we kidding? It's from the top of the circle and it goes in. Like, maybe the Gensel goal. But even the announcers, they go, oh, that's a bad goal. That's a bad goal. And so if we're being honest with ourselves and we're not playing favorites and we don't throw away everything, if you have a goalie playing in a hockey game and he plays incredible, absolutely incredible, but he gives up two beach balls, is he a good goalie?
Yeah, that's a
loaded question. If he does it two games in a row, Tim, is he a good goalie? No, he is not. So the fact that this guy's still on net playing Team Finland, and they will beat Team Finland, they're up 3-0 right now. He is going to be your starting goaltender for the championship game versus the USA. That's crazy to me. And credit John Cooper. He said, I'm going to roll with one guy from start to finish. So he's a man of his word. But at what point do you just have to look at your goaltender and go, I don't trust him. I don't trust him because he's not going to make that save.
Going back to your question, this is what Cooper said. He said, you're allowing two goals a game is not worthy of pulling him out. He's played well enough for us to win every game. And yes, a couple of those goals were not great, but the same that two goals a game is two goals a game. You know what I mean? So, and I think you have to look at Canada's offense as some of the reason that they haven't won both of these games. Right now, so Bennington had an assist on McDavid's one of McDavid's goal. That makes him tied.
He touched the puck a little bit and gave it to Dread Doughty. Awesome. Okay. What an offensive wunderkind.
No. I'm just saying, for context, that assist makes him third on the team in scoring, tied. Like, you're not getting anything from, you get the overtime goal from Marner, okay, but you're not getting anything from him.
Stop.
You're not getting anything
from Stone. What is his job? What is Binnington's job?
Binnington's job is to stop the puck, and he's done
Has he been good at his job?
I would say yes.
Oh my gosh. His goals against is under 9. His save percentage. He's been bad, Tim. It's amazing you think he's been good. He's given up 2 crap goals in 2 straight games.
I'm trying to play devil's advocate to
you shouldn't. Don't do Cooper, it, because this guy has been garbage.
So what does Cooper know or see that you don't, or vice versa?
He wants to play the same goalie throughout the tournament.
Why?
I'm not the coach. I don't know. I would have gassed Binnington after game 1. I would have pulled him after the second goal versus Larkin. I'm like, that's enough. I've seen enough. We're still in this game. It's 2-1. We got a chance. These are savable shots. And you look at Hellebuck. He let in a bad goal versus Finland in game 1. He bounced back. Has he let in another goal that's been bad? No. The McDavid goal? That's a goal. It's a goal in any league versus any goaltender. That's all he's given up. So I don't want to defend this guy. He sucks. Okay? In this tournament, he's not playing good. You have to call a spade a spade. And yet now he's going to shut out Finland, and everyone's going to go, see, I knew we should have stuck with him. Canada arguably could be 3-0 right now if Aiden Hill was in net. Because the USA's, all of the states' goals were savable. So what are we talking about here? I don't want to make you be devil's advocate when you know you're wrong. Because Binnington should not should not have been in net. So it's just it is what it is. But it looks like he'll be in the finals. He'll be the goaltender. And then, is it a good thing if they're in the finals and he plays and they lose? And you go, well, at least they made him to the finals. It's just like, okay, sounds good. If that's you're going to, go to bed with, feel good about yourself.
Realistically, not you, but thinking about how John Cooper's thinking, what would it take for him to get pulled? What scenario?
Oh, now that scenario is gone. Like, that ship is sailed.
In game, though. I'm talking in game. Like, Binnington starts the championship game. Does he have to, like, let in 3 and 5 shots to be pulled? Is it that?
Yeah, it has to be drastic where you give up a lot early. But okay. That's his guy.
He's not going to do that. He's going to...
Maybe you think so?
I think he's going to make, I think he'll do every game what he does in all these games. He's going to make some great saves. The stats are going to be okay. But there's one or two that you want back. Chris Pronger talked about this. It's just the timing. You need the big save, and you need it in the third period on a 2-on-1 where you have an unobstructed shot on a bad angle. You need to make that save.
Even Larkin was surprised he scored. Because he should have had one earlier, hit the post.
Speaking of Larkin, he is one of the better power play guys on the team statistically, and he's not on any power play unit. He played like 9 or 10 minutes in the first game, played a little more, I think 16 minutes in game 2, scored the biggest goal maybe of his career. I hope he sees more ice time in the finals, because I think he's earned it.
But then this is something I wanted to touch on too, because the roster makeup of these two teams, when you look top to bottom, and it's evident with Team Canada, the way that they made up this team, they prioritized different types of players with different assets. You know, a Hagel, a Sorelli, you want those guys on there because they kill penalties, they're hard to play against, a Sam Bennett. They foregoed guys who are high-end skill guys because they thought you could round out this roster and have guys who complement each other. Well, don't look now. They made a huge mistake, because when I'm watching this tournament and I'm watching the guys that the USA can throw out there for their third and fourth line, and when your third and fourth line includes guys like Matthew Bolton, like JT Miller, like Dylan Larkin, those types of players, you have such a huge advantage versus Canada, who's throwing out a Sorelli, a Hagel, a Bennett, who have, no offense to them, they're really good players, not a lot of offensive upside. And it's just, I do notice that's been the big difference of this game. It puts a ton of pressure on Crosby, McDavid, McKinnon, but it also eases up the American burden when you can just focus on one line, two lines who are scoring goals. And you can say, okay, if we shut down McDavid and we shut down McKinnon, we have a really good chance to win this hockey game because their third and fourth line won't hurt us. In contrast, the third and fourth line for the Americans will hurt you. Coming into this tournament, Tim and I were going back and forth for, you know, wild card, who's going to be the underdog. Mine was Matt Boldy. I was fully on board with this guy playing a fantastic tournament, and I think he's played great. Youngest guy on Team USA, playing really, really solid hockey. He scored a goal in game one, played really well last game. So I just think Canada, and it's coming to fruition. Everybody critiqued them with this roster makeup. We're seeing why you should have picked the best player on every team or the best players for the team, not tried to build a whole team because they can't score. They don't have that third option. I'm sorry, Brad Marchand. You shouldn't be here. There were better options out there. Sam Bennett and maybe even a Seth Jarvis. There were better offensive options available. And it's noticeable when the third and fourth guys get on the ice, third and fourth line, because it's dominated by USA. Like, it's not even close to him. So I want to throw that out there because it's a big deal. And then not including an Evan Bouchard, not including another offensive puck-minded defenseman. You don't think they called Evan Bouchard? He was already gone. He's like, no, that ship has sailed, my man. I wanted to be on the team. You guys gassed me. I'm on vacation now. I'm sorry. So you end up with Thomas Harley.
Yeah, I was thinking about like a Mark Scheifele, right? Like, this is a really good scoring center you left off the roster. But another one that people are talking about, and I want to hear your take on this, when you think about the way the U.S. has, and we saw, you know, Hagel and Bennett and Parayko even respond to this, the toughness conversation. But don't you think they could benefit from having a Tom Wilson on their roster? Like, is he a good response? He's scored a lot of goals. He's playing on the best team in hockey. There's no one else like him on this roster or even in Canada, period. Like, why couldn't they have him as their 12th, 13th forward for a game like that?
I guess you maybe put him over a Travis Konecny or you put him over a Sam Bennett. Maybe that's the reason. I could see that.
But he's got 24 goals in the year, you know?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So maybe he would have been a good choice. He's a hell of a player and he would have been motivated. And I would have much rather see him fighting a Tkachuk than a Brandon Hagel. You know what I mean? Like, if you put a Brandon Hagel on there, who you're only going to play him 8 to 9 minutes a game, and there aren't many penalties being called, what good is he? Same goes for Anthony Cirelli. Same goes for a Travis Konecny. Sam Bennett only played 4 minutes last game. You know, could have you been more well-suited? If you're going to go with the physical route, Tom Wilson's more physical. And he does have that offensive upside. I think you're absolutely right. I've changed my mind. I think that would have been a great pick versus these five guys.
Yeah. And just to, you know, put a little bow on this. So Jake Guentzel gets the empty net goal for a second of the game. He leads a tournament with 3. And Team USA wins. It looks like we'll probably get a rematch on Thursday night, which is very exciting. But I think just to put like some context like around how important this game was, where it's making national headlines, where people that don't follow hockey are talking about it. And I think John Cooper said it best. He said, quote, "This game's in a better place because last night's game existed. It's disappointing we weren't on the right end of it, but the characters, the personality on both teams really came to the forefront. It's why we love this game." I think it's great wording. And you saw that. I mean, even Sidney Crosby, who had his perfect streak, I think he was 26-0 on Team Canada, was snapped finally. And even he was talking about just how incredible that game was. So, a lot of fun. I'm glad you got to watch some of it, Sean. We didn't get a Super Bowl repeat where you're just catching the repeats the next day. So right now, Canada versus Finland is happening. They're up 3-0 after 1. So let's assume that continues, which means Canada will play. If Finland somehow ties it up or even forces overtime, it creates a lot of scenarios where multiple teams could go on to the finals because Team USA plays Sweden later. And I like the idea of Sweden playing for something. And having a chance to win if they beat USA in regulation tonight. So hopefully we see whatever scenario creates Sweden playing for a chance to win. And it's not
we're
just
not going
to
see it. Canada will win this game. They're up 3-0. It's already locked in stone. It's USA Canada in the final. The bigger question is, does USA give Matthew Tkachuk a little break here? I think they do. He doesn't play tonight. They put in whoever else is to fill in for him because he needs a break. He looked like, I don't know what's wrong with him, but he's obviously dealing with something. He'll be full steam coming into the finals next week. And it's just, or this later this week, it's going to be fun hockey. And based on what we've seen, you would have to think the USA is favored by a goal and a half. Just they're so strong. And they're playing such great team hockey. I don't know how Canada, maybe with Cale Makar, it'll be a different game. But boy, the USA, it's hard to poke weaknesses in this team top to bottom. Their defense, Zach Werenski, no one's talking about this guy. He's playing lights out. He's being overshadowed by Slavin and McAvoy, all the big hits and this and that. He's got 4 assists. He's playing great hockey. They upped him to the first power play unit because Fox wasn't working out so well, and they made the change right away, and Werenski's playing fantastic back there. So everything is clicking for this USA hockey team right now. And I don't see a weakness. I don't know how you beat this team if you're Team Canada, barring getting Binnington to play fantastic, which I don't think will happen. I think everybody knows that.
So assuming it's USA-Canada on Thursday night, what would you anticipate in terms of the, like, are we going to see fights again off the face-off? No. Or is it going to be more of a controlled, like, don't make a mistake type of game, like a game 7? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think you'll see any fights to start the game. Maybe during the game, tempers will flare, but I think they got that out of their system. They set the tone, they sent the message, and now it'll be just a really, really good hockey game. Because even in the last game, you noticed in the second period, I think everybody exhaled. They regrouped, and then it was back to work. Even Mike Sullivan on the bench for the USA, he's like, I love our energy. Now we have to control it and get on our toes and get after him, because maybe we got a little too crazy the first period. And then you saw the USA start to just forecheck, get on their toes and get after these Canadian defensemen, which was once a strength for this country, is a big weakness now. The defense for Team Canada is beatable. They are susceptible to giving the puck over, getting beat wide. Like, it's Devin Taves did not play strong. He played really, really poor versus the USA. Parenko was okay. Josh Morris, he's been their best defenseman top to bottom. He's played fantastic. But other than that, it's a weakness for it. So for Canada to win, you really do have to maximize those top 6 guys. They have to play lights out. They have to score two or three goals. And you got to hope Binnington makes some saves. But I don't know. I think everybody knew the USA had the best roster coming into this, and they aren't resting on their laurels. They're not reading the press clippings. They're going out and they're showing, yeah, we do. We have high end talent. Austin Matthews, his defensive game is so incredibly good. His stick work, his ability to pick passes off and pick guys' pockets, it's remarkable. He looks confident with the puck. He looks so incredibly good. He's night and day comparing him to Mitch Marner. Mitch Marner is invisible. For long stretches of time. When Austin Matthews is on the ice, him and Jack Hughes, oof, every time they're on the ice, you go, ooh, this is a good pairing. And then all of a sudden, Jake Guentzel shows up and scores.
All the stick work from Hughes and Matthews in the D-Cor, and they got no stick infractions. No tripping, no hooking, like none of that stuff, which is really impressive. And I always like seeing a bigger guy like Matthews who's able to use his body without being super physical. It's a hard line to straddle, but he uses just boxing out and his reach and his strength without having to shove guys around, because not a lot of guys can do that. So he's not going to be a Lindros type, but just using his frame in a way that to his advantage is something that he does really, really well.
Oh, and he's been incredible. Firing the puck, if he gets going with the goals, look out. Like, he's not even scoring. And that's the scary part of the USA.
So doesn't
he's playing fantastic.
If you were reading the tea leaves, doesn't it feel like it's going to be another close game? 2-3, 1-2, nothing, whatever. And it's going to come down to one save. It's going to come down to Binnington. Does he make it or not? Do you feel like that's a safe bet for how that game's going to go?
No, I really don't. I feel like it's going to come down to Team Canada, and it'll be on Crosby or McDavid's stick. They'll hang around. They'll play solid hockey. It'll be 1-1, 2-2. Then all of a sudden, they'll get a break, and Crosby will be in all alone. And it happened last game. I think Mark Stone had a couple chances, and he didn't bury, where there will be an opportunity for Canada to take control of the game. And that'll be the point. Can he score? And there's this sinking feeling inside of me that Canada will eke out this. And it's not a bad thing, because I'm Canadian. But I just feel like I can't bet against Sidney Crosby. You know what I mean? You can't. So until they knock him off and then they win it, I still feel like they have the advantage just because of Sid. It's not because of McDavid or McKinnon or Marner or McCarr. It's Crosby. The USA can't match that. They really can't. The closest one to it, I think, is JT Miller. I really do. I know, I might be a homer because he's been on the show forever, but I just like JT Miller. I think this is his type of tournament where the cream rises to the top, and he always seems to play his best hockey when the lights are the brightest. So it's just that Sidney Crosby affect him. I don't know.
Well, we know for sure Canada doesn't have a response to Connor Hellebuck, so I'm going to hang my hat on him being the star of the game, probably the star of the tournament, and that'll be the difference in hopefully USA pulling out the win.
Yeah, they're going to start the second period here, Canada, Finland. Let's do some quick hits, Tim, and we'll get out of here. We've been talking a bunch about USA, Canada. Boy, oh boy.
Yeah, I don't have any today. It's all been about this game. So there's no other hockey news in the world right now.
I love it, and that's the way it should be. It's getting national media, national press. It's very, very fun. Check it out. Have fun watching this game today, and then the USA-Sweden one later, and we got the finals on Thursday. So we'll talk to you guys later this week, probably Friday. Let's do Monday, Friday. You know what I mean? Cap it off, because then we'll have that big, big Canada-USA game to talk about. Maybe we'll do a Wednesday one. I don't know. We'll see how the wind blows this week. But thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it. And just enjoy, man. Enjoy the hockey. It's going to be fun. Cheers, everybody.
My heart pitter-patters for free cheesy garlic pitters. Solo Nando's is self-care. And before you know it, an extra hot date with my free chicken wrap. Maybe it's a little takeaway treat. The possibilities are endless. But what the hoot in heck is that? A free whole chicken. A top-tier Nando's reward, the ultimate act of love. Stunning. Then here we are again, the pitter-patter of free cheesy garlic pitter.
Sign up to Nando's rewards and fall in love with free food again and again.
T's and C's apply.
If you already prepay for your energy, a smart meter means you can top up at the touch of a button. Whether you're on the sofa,
with your little cherubs,
at the shops, after the shops have closed, or when you're cozy in bed and it's raining cats and chicos.
Top up anytime, anywhere. In-store, on mobile or online. Search Get a Smart Meter. Eligibility may vary. Consumer action required.